willkommen zum letzten On the Way to New Work Podcast des Jahrzehnts. Leider wieder eine Folge, die ich alleine mache. Christoph und ich haben das kurz vor Weihnachten auch nochmal festgestellt, dass wir zu häufig auseinander sind. Jeder in seiner eigenen Welt ein bisschen rumfliegt, rumläuft und Christoph neuerdings rumfährt mit dem Campingmobil. Das wollen wir ein bisschen ändern. Andererseits empfinden wir es auch als ganz großen Vorteil, dass wir eben auch, wenn wir allein unterwegs sind, immer mal eine Folge aufnehmen können. Ab und zu nehmen wir ja auch noch Gäste dazu als Co-Host. Das machen wir auch weiter. Macht uns auch viel Spaß, mal mit einer anderen Perspektive das zu machen. Aber diesmal, wie gesagt, bin ich allein. Ich treffe John Stepper. Den treffen wir zum zweiten Mal. In der ersten Folge haben wir sehr viel über ihn gesprochen, über sein Leben, über seinen Weg, was ja auch eine typische Herangehensweise in unserem Podcast ist. In dieser Folge habe ich mir nochmal vorgenommen, die Methode Working Out Loud ein bisschen genauer herauszuarbeiten, denn ich denke, dass das für viele unserer Hörerinnen und Hörer auch ein Value ist, das nochmal genauer kennenzulernen. Natürlich gibt es genug andere Materialien, Bücher, Filme, um das festzustellen, aber wir haben festgestellt, dass der Podcast doch ein gutes Medium ist, auch in solche Themen mal tiefer einzusteigen. Mir hat sehr viel Spaß gemacht. Die Folge ist auf Englisch. Wir haben Gäste. Wir sind auf dem Working Out Loud Tag gewesen in Berlin. Ganz, ganz toll. Hier auch nochmal herzlichen Dank für die Organisatoren, dass sie uns dort eingeladen haben und wir diese Folge aufnehmen konnten. Also jetzt ganz viel Spaß mit John Stepper und Working Out Loud.
You are here for the second time in our podcast.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's so nice you do it twice. Yeah, thank you.
And I'm so thankful that you do it twice. And we met last week. And maybe before we start with the podcast, I have to say how happy I am that we start a circle together.
You're not as happy as me, because what I didn't tell you is I saw you in the room. We were at a company, I was doing a workshop, and I saw that you were there, and you were running the event, you were the master of ceremonies. And I'm thinking, oh no, like here's this guy who's super famous, people love him, he's so talented, and now I've got to do my thing in front of him. He won't like it, it won't be good enough. And so after, I see you in the workshop, and I'm nervous. And after you came up and said, look, I'm going to join a circle. And then we had that awkward moment where I said, oh, well, I was going to join a circle. Like, would you have me? And you said, would you? And it was like the first date, and it was beautiful.
And then there we are. Yeah, thank you so much. And we will start already in December. And I think one of the best hacks we can give for a circle is to solve the logistics first. Sit together and
right.
So take your calendar.
Imagine, even if you're with a group of friends that you really like and you're going to have lunch every week, just organizing that can be painful, and it's enough that you don't show up. And that's friends and something that's really easy and lightweight. If you're trying to develop yourself in some way, which is a bit more challenging, then the logistics will be enough for many people to not make it through. And so what we did that day is we just, in 3 minutes, how's this date, this time? And we're four people in different locations, different time zones. You travel a lot. And yet, at 3 minutes, we sorted it all out, had a WhatsApp group, and we're ready and looking forward to it.
Great. I think we have to step back because some of our audience, some people of our audience probably did not listen to the first episode. Maybe that there are even some people who did not know or do not know the method so far. So
it's a big world. There's a lot out there.
I would love to start in the very beginning. Where did it come from? Where did this idea come from?
So I've worked in big companies my whole life, and what I felt in around 2008, we had reorganized, and I felt that I had no control over my career. And I was at the whim, really, of a boss or a process or something that could change my life. And what that led to for me, and what I saw it lead to for other people, is every change, every reorganization, every budget cut, every performance review is like a spin of the roulette wheel, and you don't know what you're going to get. And when you live that way, that tends to breed fear and defensiveness. So starting in about 2008, when I first experienced this kind of change, I looked for a way that I could take a bit more control myself. I could gain access to opportunities without having to wait for somebody else to do something, or a new boss or project or a lucky spin. And that ultimately led to Working Out Loud.
Amazing story. But from this inside of knowing I have to do something, I have to change something to develop such a powerful tool. It takes some time. It takes tests. So how was the process?
A lot of mistakes. It started, so I worked in the technology department at Deutsche Bank, and I worked on trading floors, which is a strange job. And it was 2008, you know, Facebook was 2 years old. We started to see this emergence of not just social media, but social intranets inside companies. It was early, but we started to see that. And I said, this is it. If we introduce this, it's like the internet at work. Anyone can shape their reputation. You could access anyone. You weren't limited by your box and your chart. So I thought that technology was going to be the answer. I introduced a social network into Deutsche Bank. And like many people who listen to your podcast, you realize the tools are important. They're not enough. And I saw that it was behavior change, not knowledge transfer, not teaching people, certainly not convincing people. They had to experience what I experienced over time in a safe way where they could experiment without being judged. They had to experience it over time so they could realize the benefits themselves and start to cultivate new habits and behaviors. And that's what led to Working Out Loud being an idea, like share your work, to being more of a method that anybody could put into practice.
Mm-hmm. So before we get into the method, I want to share a study I've heard of. You're probably familiar with this. It's done at Harvard University. It's the longest study in history of Harvard. It's since 80 years. It's the professor number 4 who's running this. And the whole study is just to find out what makes people healthy and happy.
Right. It's a longevity study. Yeah,
it's a longevity study. I think they took people from the opposite of Boston, so people from Harbor and low education, and people from MIT and Harvard, and compared these groups, did exercises, interviews, observations with the kids and the kids of the kids over these 80 years, just to find reasons why are some of them happy or healthy or at the best.
And those
happy
two
and
things
happy.
Tend to be related, by the way. Yes.
Yeah. And do you know what is the single reason which explains why people are more happy than others or more healthy than
others?
I don't know
the one. I have two that come to mind, which is relationships. So you've got connections.
It's relationships. It's relationships. It's friendships. It's relationships. And that's what I read on your, I think it was on your website, that the reason why you're doing this is creating more collaborative cultures. And you believe in community, in relations. And I think this is, you have the deepest insight you could choose to build up this method.
Yes. And what I saw, because I came from where I came, with working inside a big bank, I recognize that just appealing to people's sense of community and friendships is not enough. Mm-hmm. Like, I have got to say, in the midst of a busy, distracted day where you have trouble paying attention to pretty much anything, why or how could you possibly change your habits and behaviors? And I wanted to provide other benefits besides this long-term sense of relationships. Because if it were that easy, hey, more relationships, you'll live longer, then people wouldn't smoke and they'd exercise more, right? It's hard.
It's just the inside, but I think the powerful thing is that you created a method which is so simple to start, so easy to use. You need nothing, you need no money, no budget. You just need your a room or your mobile
Skype
phone.
Or Skype or
whatever.
The
principles you put behind this method, maybe we start before we go into the method as well, your five principles.
Sure. So I remember them. It's okay.
Yeah, okay. Nobody does.
No, but that's great. That was very lovely that you were helping me.
They won't tell.
They won't tell.
I have.
It's the internet, man. I know how this works. So, okay. So we're all wired with the same intrinsic motivator. So I'm going to go through these five elements very quickly. But that's what it's based on. Like, the more we know, and there's a lot of science over the last 20, 30 years, about how human beings are designed, then the more we could use that information for good instead of evil. So the big three, and it was the book that probably popularized this most is Drive by Daniel Pink. But it's based on self-determination theory. I want a bit more control. I want a sense of competence, getting better at something, learning, progress. And I want a sense of connection to other people and connection to meaning in what I do. So those are the big three, control, competence, and connection. Now, the elements, you start with a goal in your circle, purposeful discovery. That orients you, that you're not just busy, you're not just having coffee, you're not just on social media. You are working towards a goal that you chose, an individual goal that you chose. No one judges you. No one tells you what to do. Purposeful discovery. Second is relationships, partly because of what you talked about, but also because it's through other people that we access knowledge and opportunities that can help us get things done. Right. The Strength of Weak Ties in 1973, my famous paper, showed us that. So not just the people in your team or that you know, but a bigger network. How do you build relationships? It's a set of signals over time. That's what leads to trust and relatedness. So generosity is the third element. And a subset of what you have to offer. Some things are very human. Attention, appreciation, basic stuff. They're universal. But it also includes your visible work, the fourth element. What am I working on? Why? How? What resources have been useful? What people? All of that can be packaged as a contribution, something that could help others trying to do what you're doing. And the last one is what makes this practice sustainable, which is a growth mindset. You're not good or bad at working out loud or a technology or a people person. It's about effort over time, deliberate practice over time. And we give you the space to do that in a circle, a group of four or five people, so that you could practice in a psychologically safe space, make mistakes, make progress until you start to cultivate new habits and behaviors.
That's amazing. We did this workshop last week. You mentioned it in the beginning. And so one of your assumptions was true. So I liked the speech very much, but I wanted to steal myself away.
Right.
I said, well, our workshop, why? Right. I know the method. I know him. I will meet him next week.
I told you I was nervous. Uh-huh.
And then I said, no, you can't do it now. There are so I saw the people, how they came together, and they saw two of the, it was at Weiersdorf, two of the ladies who organized the whole festival. They did a new work festival, and we didn't even have to talk. We saw each other, said yes, and then we started. And the first thing we had to do was to write down 10 important things about ourselves.
Right.
And I mean, it's a 6 minute. What is it? Eight minute,
yeah.
And you are connected. It's amazing. I learned things about this two young women where I said, "Wow, that is so nice that they share this with me." It was not the typical.
It's not something you do at the workplace very often.
No, it is. It is safe space from the very beginning.
Right, and how we framed that was, and everyone experiences this. You're sitting next to someone, you don't know them at all. There is a distance between you. They are not us. They're them, and if you discover that you have something in common, a child the same age, you went to the same university, same hometown, you instantly transforms the relationship. They become us. Right? This arithmetic is wired deep into our brain to distinguish us and them, and we treat people with whom we feel related very differently. So you can cultivate that sense of relatedness, and that exercise was a very small taste how you could cultivate it in minutes, and then that's something that you could build on. That simple fact that you share is a bridge or connection that you could build on.
Yeah, it is really, it's amazing. I've practiced this, or I've learned this over the last 2.5 years with the podcast, because you create, in the podcast, you create a safe space as well, even if there are sometimes 30,000
right
people listening to us,
yeah.
Or in this case, 20 people listening it live. Because you try to listen more than to talk yourself. You're really interested, you're focused, you don't have your smartphone. Is there anything in the world which is more interesting? And I think this deep listening, attention, trust creates an atmosphere where you immediately can...
I think that's right. But if I use those words, you might nod your head, but you're busy. So then you move on. And what I learned over time, and it took me lots of different experiments. You know, I used to give talks, I would train people, all sorts of things that didn't produce much change. It was only when people practiced it for themselves in a peer support group where they had the structure and shared accountability and help, like we're all going through this together, different goals, but we're all going through it together. That's what led to the exchange of signals between them and showed them that they could approach work and other people differently.
So we talked about the logistics in the beginning, so this was the first hack, but now let's dive into the method, into the 12 weeks. Maybe you can start by telling us why you choose 12 weeks, why you choose 1 week per week in an ideal case. Mm-hmm. When we planned our circle, and then I realized that you are much more flexible than the method seems to be. Right. Well, maybe we need 10 days in between.
It's Christmas. We're going to take 2 weeks off.
Maybe we start with this, and then we dive into the week first.
Well, I'm conscious that people are going to practice this in the workplace, right? So 1 hour a week is roughly 2% of your time. So depending on who you are, it sounds like a lot or a little, but for most people, they could find that hour, whether it's an hour they're not sitting in front of their inbox or an hour at lunch. Many people just do it on their own time. Why it's 12 weeks is that there's plenty of habit change research on how long that takes. It's not exact, so it's not, you know, it's not just 65 days or just but it's range. And given what we're doing throughout the 12 weeks, it's a set of signals you're exchanging, and sometimes that takes some time. There's a latency. Oh, I sent an email to Julia, and then, you know, Julia responded the next week. So 12 weeks, which in real time might be 3 months, 4 months, is enough repetition over time that you can develop new habits. That's why it's that long.
Perfect. So I'm now together with you in week one. So how do we start?
You sure you don't want this to be a surprise?
No.
Okay, spoiler alert. All right. So in week one, I've purposely packed each week so you're not bored. This is not a support group, so you don't just chat. This is practice over time. And there's a nice mix, I hope, of practice and discussion. So in week one, one of the first things you do is write down a goal that you care about. But it doesn't have to be your big goal. It could be almost anything. In the workplace, it's usually a goal like, I'd like to meet more people who do what I do. Or, gee, I'm hoping to do something, so I'd like to learn from people who already do what I do. Or I'd like to learn about a new topic, explore a different possibility for me. It could be very lightweight. It's framed as a learning and exploration goal that orients who you're trying to build relationships with and what kind of contributions you're going to make. And in that first week, there's already this exchange of, I share my goal with you, which is vulnerability, right? I may not have told my wife what my goal is. And then you're giving me attention. You listen. And so right there, a little magic happens. Next, you start to answer the question, who's related to that goal? Who could help me with this? And you make a list. And maybe you search on your phone or computer, and maybe the circle helps you. But by the end of week one, you've got a goal, and you've taken some step towards it. And what happens, and why we called it attune your attention, it's the same thing that happens when you buy a certain color car, and you see that color car everywhere. Mm-hmm. Boy, red Audis, what happened? Everyone has them all of a sudden. Well, you've literally just primed your brain so you're more receptive to that. Like, neurologically, that's what's happening. And that frequency illusion is what happens in week one. You have thought about a goal, written it down, shared it with a group, taken a step towards it. So now, over the next week, you are receptive, you are open to things that were invisible before related to your goal, and you've already started to open up a bit and ready for your second week.
And you probably do it for your circle as well. Huh? So you know the goal of one or two or three members of the circle of all.
Well, that's interesting. That's right.
So that's what happened with me when I shared when I heard the goals.
Funny.
Of
that's
my.
True.
It was amazing because in the following days I've wrote down things I
cool.
saw.
This is going to be good for Christina. Yeah, I'm going to remember that when I see her. Yeah, perfect. Yeah. Exactly right. Yeah. And so in week two now, you make your first contribution. And for most people, they have a very narrow sense of what it is they have to offer. Plus, you know, even though it's called working out loud, the idea that you're going to blog or share your work or like that is beyond most people. We may get it on this podcast, but for most people, it's a bridge too far. So where do you start? You start with something that everybody has and that everyone would like to receive, which is attention. And how you do that, you're doing it in your circle in person. In the exercises, you could do it by email, but you could also do it on social media that says, you know, Michael posts this on LinkedIn about his new business, and I'm going to follow him. It's a trivial thing, but it's a signal to him that I see you and I'm interested in what you have to say. And that may be in the week two and then week three, I may offer appreciation. Boy, that was really useful. Hey, thanks for being at the event at Beiersdorf, right? And thanks for coming up after because I was nervous and it meant a lot that you said that. Again, it doesn't change your life. It doesn't change mine, but that's another signal. It's not fake. It's not manipulative. I'm just being human. But I'm allowing myself to exchange that signal in a way that is genuine and feels good to me. And we do that baby steps in weeks two and three. And throughout the rest of the 12 weeks, it's a wide range of contributions offered in a variety of ways.
Yeah, it sounds so simple and it really works because we tested it already there in a very short and condensed version. So after 1, 2, 3, 4 weeks, are there many circles who then start to struggle because there
sure.
is one who is not supporting the group in the same way?
It's this kind of thing tends to attract people who are kind, nice, generous. So it's I've never heard of actually bad behavior or someone's not respecting the confidentiality of the group. Nothing like that. But what happens is real life. Maybe I signed up and I didn't really think it through that this is 12 meetings. Maybe I picked a goal that isn't I don't really love as much as I thought. And instead of changing it, which you could certainly do, I just disappear. Maybe my kid's sick. And I just can't pay attention. It's okay. What we've developed is a set of ways inside and outside organizations to make it easier, just like our circle. And for most people, they'll either keep going or they'll say, look, logistics got in the way this time, but now in my next attempt, I know what I'm going to do, and I will take a different approach. So yes, it happens. Yeah. It's like any other peer support method, and that's okay. People will find other ways to keep going or form a new group.
So there's no problem. Let's say there's one is missing one session, then he for the next session
it's lightweight. So when you're when you're busy accepting some award or promoting some mega event that you do, we're gonna say, look, how about we just skip this week and we'll catch up next time. So that's one option.
Group.
The whole group says, we'll take a time out. We'll skip this Friday and we'll just pick up where we left off. Great. Or, no, next Friday, no, it's such get complicated. Oh, I can't do it then. What about? Okay, Michael, we'll catch up separately. So we'll meet, but then we'll check in with you via our WhatsApp group. Right? So we're still connected. You could do these things on the plane. It's not, but nobody gets left behind, at least in our circle.
Yeah. And to prepare oneself for every week, you have videos for every week. You have
so the
papers.
Way there's the guides. The circle guides are free on the internet, and they're in 12 languages. Most of them produced by volunteers, by the way. So Turkish, Russian, Portuguese, Mandarin, and I've also created products that companies will buy. So we'll think of them as, premium materials, videos, journals, that kind of thing, that companies will customize because that's what makes it easier for employees to practice in the workplace. So we have a range of options for people, but I wanted it to be free so that anybody could experiment with it, like you said, without budget or permission. And in fact, what happens is that if it works for them, they'll turn around and go back inside their company and say, we need this here.
So let's go back to the process, to week three. So week three is take three small steps. You already started with week
appreciate,
two.
Right. So what are those steps? I'm going to try and have you offer some kind of contribution every week. So week three is you're offering appreciation. Again, it's a little bit more than a like button or follow, so I have to write something, but it's pretty safe, right? Hey, thank you for this podcast today. I really appreciate it. Again, don't do it if it's fake, but it's another small step. The other steps are, when are you going to do this? So I get it. Everyone's in the busy trap. So in the beginning of week three, we have you just book time in your calendar when you can do something related to your goal. And you're like, oh no, another hour? Look, whatever it takes, maybe it's 15 minutes. Even if it's the smallest little investment, that little step is what unlocks other possibly bigger steps. So we have you take care of the time problem in a small way, at least make a little dent in it. And we have you offer appreciation. And then we have you keep exploring other people and or groups that might be related to your goal. So your world now from week one, oh, I know five people, maybe seven. Oh, I found one. Oh, on the internet, I found one. Week by week by week, you've attuned your attention. The circle says, hey, how about this guy? And so by week four, you start to look at other online groups. And you see there's a lot out there that was simply not visible to you. There are possibilities, resources, ideas.
Closed groups where you can apply.
True. And you're gradually developing a richer network while you realize that I can cultivate relationships with them.
Mm-hmm. Before we come to next week, I just want to go into this, but what you said with a little sentence, you said, well, yeah, take some time which is related to your goal. Mm. This was my biggest insight over the last years that I realized I write goals for the year. Mm. And someone said, okay, Michael, what are you doing to really reach your goals? Do you connect your calendar to your goals?
Right. And I said, well, the infinite to-do list that keeps you busy.
No. And then I said, well, try it. Take your agenda for the next 3 months and then try to see which of your appointments you have is related to your goals. And then I found out over the next half year, 5%.
It could be horrifying.
It's horrifying. Yeah,
So you look in the mirror and you're like, what am I doing? Why would I not invest in myself and in what I say is important? And for me, at least, that's the difference between living an intentional life. I intend to do this, and I am doing it, versus a reactive life.
Yeah.
I intend to do this, but whatever happens to pop up is going to get my attention. For me, the main reason why I do that is just resistance. It's easier to process emails all day than to sit in front of a blank screen, let's say, and write the next working out loud method.
Yeah, right? It's another learning out of the last 170 podcast when I heard this sentence first, that our email inbox is a to-do list that someone else put together for us.
And that's just one example. Yeah. Right? You've got inbound stuff happening all the time. But having said that, it's not easy. There are some tips and techniques. We expose you to some of those during these 12 weeks. And then your circle helps you back to peer support. We try to give you a range of behavioral nudges that will make it easier for you to make continued progress. Mm. Your progress is going to be bigger or smaller than Alexander's, perhaps, right? or than Melanie's, and that's okay. But any progress will open you up so that other steps are possible, maybe other bigger ones.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you can then, after your 12 weeks, you can take out of this experience, wow, why should I go back to my old life? I could use these tools and methods to do my daily job better.
What tends to happen, and a fair number of people will pick a conservative goal in their first circle, and then in the second one, They're a bit more confident. They're a bit more open. And this, you know, at this time, I'm going to go for this. And that's... I was working at Deutsche Bank when my circle said, oh, why don't you do this Working Out Loud thing full time? Like, no. I have five kids. Like, I can't do... I was 50.
I have to pay bills.
Yes, that's not going to do... That's for other people, right? That, I'm not that person. Mm. So this is a label and self-limiting belief that I had. But my circle opened me up. I didn't do it right away. But over time, you know, step by step, and now in our circle, I've got a goal that I would not have dreamed of 3 years ago. But, you know, who knew? A path emerged, and now you're going to help me make progress toward it.
So we did our first small steps, and we are entering week four, where we have to earn someone else's attention.
Right. This is also very practical. The gift you're offering is a useful resource. So it's... People do it all the time, right? But it tends to be a mindless propagation of links, which the internet is full of. What we want you to do is offer a specific something to a specific person for a specific reason. And we help you craft that communications in such a way that it's more likely to be received. So it's about empathy. Hey, this person's got 1,000 emails. I'm going to send him another one with, hey, look at this video, right? Practical communications tips that you discuss in your circle so that you could say, oh, hey, how's this look, Michael? I was going to send this to Christoph. Is that weird? Oh, well, you might say it this way. And that little bit of help, I experiment, I get feedback, I do it. That's what helps improve my communication. So it's a very normal thing to do. I've got something I'd like you to see. But the week is all about improving your communication skills.
That's cool. And I like the approach that you really share this within a group, because I mean, I very often, as someone who had to sell over almost all his career ideas, stuff like this, and I, whenever it is really, really, really important for me, I ask someone else, is this mail the right thing to approach this person?
And then, now you could do it in this very lightweight way, which is just for the people.
Yeah.
And they already know your goals, and they already like you, want to support you. So that could be even easier to do it that way than at home with a spouse.
Yeah. So how then, next step, how to make it personal? I when I read this, I believe it's how to create my own style in this new field where I'm in, or what do you mean with make it personal?
I mean, so at work, we've been trained, I certainly was trained, to wear a mask of cool professionalism, right? You are a professional. In fact, I remember on the corporate directory, you weren't allowed to have your own photo because everyone should have the same blue background and wear a suit and a tie. And you know, the senior people were outraged if you didn't have that kind of photo. Like, people could put anything. And it turns out that plenty of research that if you want people to collaborate, if you want them to have that sense of relatedness, they don't want to work with masks. They want to work with other people. So what week five has you do, and I get plenty of feedback that from people who don't want to mix professional and personal. You don't have to. But what I'm trying to have you experience is that when you're yourself, which could be like that 10 facts exercise, you're yourself, you have things that make you Michael, me John, and there's many possible connections between us, you will be more effective and you will be more fulfilled. You may not believe that, you may not like it, but in week five, you're going to at least experience it.
Mm-hmm.
So that either you'll shift a little bit, and when you look at other people, you'll be a bit more curious about Anne from Osnabrück, for example, or Stefan and his Italian roots, right? Like, that makes them, and I lean in now, which is better for everybody. You don't have to tweet your facts, you don't have to put them in your profile, you don't have to... But you're more mindful that you already have many, many things to offer and many possible connections to other people. Mm. That's week five.
I can imagine that this within the group gives you an extra power because everyone now says, wow, there's so much more than...
That's exactly right. So they tend to, because in the beginning, again, I know I'm in a workplace, right? So people, it needs to be practical. How is this going to help me? And then week five, I mix it up a little bit. So it is personal. They're not expecting that. And they're like, oh, that was a nice exercise. Back to exchange of signals between humans, release a little bonding chemical, a little oxytocin in your brain, and you lean in. You are related to this person. You treat them differently. What then we want you to do is see that, hey, I could do this with four strangers in person or on my video call, but now I'm seeing that I could do this with anybody, with the other 300,000 people in my company or with the other people on the internet.
Which then leads us to week six.
Here we go.
Improve your visibility.
Yeah. So there's an SAP ad I saw in the Frankfurt airport that says, opportunity can't knock if it doesn't know where you live. Which I thought was, so thank you, SAP.
I will use this from now on.
Yes. Yeah, right, it's great. And that's what this is about. And so once again, you'll have people who are resistant to this idea. I do not want to be visible. I certainly don't. I don't trust social media. I'll delete my Facebook account. And that's fine. You don't want to use it, don't use it. Again, what I'm having you experience, and week six is really about a baby step of, you have some kind of online profile, which includes information about you and about what you do or want to do. That's it. It is a digital business card. This is not scary or a high-risk activity. It's quite normal. And in a company, it could be on your intranet. You've got some skills or other tags, and that exposes you to people and opportunities you would not discover otherwise. What I wanted you to experience is you have a choice. You can use these tools in a mindful way that amplifies who you are and what you do and what kind of contributions you can make. But you don't have to if you don't want to. And my hope is that wherever you are with these tools, A, you've seen what's possible and how it could be used for a personal goal or for personal effectiveness, and then you have a choice. And some people say, thanks, I get it, but I don't want to do it. Okay. And then some people say, oh, I see. I've been limiting myself to my small little view of my company and world, and I could do or be much more if I shared who I am and what I'm doing and made it visible.
I like this a lot because I already experienced it with my
You do this well
with our podcast. When we started, I mean, we had experiences as entrepreneurs about how work is changing, but we were not experts in this field. And right. I still believe I'm not an expert, but other people believe I'm an expert.
I believe it.
And not
don't,
because
don't,
I
don't
because
burst my balloon, please.
Because I just was asking questions. I was asking for what are the best methods for get things done? Is get things done the method for whatever? So I was asking questions. So I just showed interest in this topic, and then I said, "Well, we started this podcast. Follow us." And then the name of the podcast is On the Way to New Work. So I did not say, "Hey, I'm the expert of new work. Listen to me." I'm on my way to new work.
And we all are. Right.
This is once you experience this, that you can show up without being an expert, just by having a strong interest or a wish to learn, can be enough.
That's right. Now, if you'd notice, though, it's week six, we still haven't been doing much working out loud in the kind of older sense of the phrase. You've just been doing kind of human being 101 stuff. With now, week six is the first time you're starting to do some visible things, but it's a digital business card. It's safe. The idea is it's a guided mastery program, which means that there are these small steps practiced over time. They build on each other. And you're looking at behaviors that are modeled by other people, including in your circle and online in your network. And that's how you develop skills over time. So a guided mastery approach. I'm kind of easing you into these bigger steps later on. And however far you go, however much you open up, your progress will be different. That's okay.
Yep. Week seven.
Week seven, which is be purposeful. Again, I wanted, so you've just done something that's kind of technical, like, oh, I updated my LinkedIn profile, maybe I've done an introduction with somebody else in a personal way. So now I wanted to introduce some more reflection. And what week seven is it's a classic visioning technique. It's not a new exercise. It is a letter from your future self. So you picked in the very beginning a small goal. You've taken these baby steps. But now all of a sudden, week seven, you're thinking 12, 24, 36 months ahead. And you're looking back and saying, well, what if it worked? Or what if I got somewhere where I'd really like to be, but I didn't even have the courage to shade that as a goal. But now it's week seven. Could I take 20 minutes and write this letter and look backwards and tell my younger self, like, how did I get here? One possible path, right? Boy, you're unlocking all sorts of stuff in your brain, which is why it's a classic exercise. Visioning matters. You see one possible path. It's not a plan. It's an intention. But you're writing it down and perhaps sharing it with your circle. And that says that reignites an even bigger sense of purpose in you and says, okay, now I'm going to look at the next few weeks in a different way. Like, now I feel like I'm going somewhere that means even more. That's week seven.
Yeah, that's cool. It reminds me the book which I read first 22 years ago, which is The Seven Habits of Stephen Covey. And one of the habits of highly effective people is the habit to have the end in mind.
Right.
And he has
a grim one to read your epitaph for what's on your tombstone, if I remember.
Yeah,
or your eulogy, what they say when you're gone.
Yeah.
I wanted something a little bit more uplifting.
I think than that. That's what I wanted to say.
Yes.
Your version is much, much better.
I want to be alive when this happens.
Yeah,
thank you.
That's so cool. Yeah. Thank you for giving us this tool. It's much better. And then we're in week eight, and then habit starts to...
Right. So, what do you find? The habit energy that you have is very strong. So what that means is, I'm doing fine. I get it. This makes sense to me. Nice letter. Oh, but you know, this week we got a staff meeting, and you're traveling. And I don't want to dial in from the airport, right? And you are drawn to your older habits. So week eight is about giving you a set of, again, we call them behavioral nudges. I've tried to distill the excellent habit research that's out there into a checklist that you could use that says, you know what, 5% of my time is all I'm spending towards my goals. What's that about? Okay, on the checklist it says structure your environment. I'm going to block out 90 minutes every Tuesday morning. That would instantly boost my average, right? I'm not going to change the world, but I'm going to do that. And I'm going to have a check-in with Christoph. 15 minutes. What are your goals for this week? Are you on track? What help do you need? No judgment, just a check-in to make sure that I'm mindful of what that top goal is. A set of eight items in week eight that serves as your habit checklist so that what you're doing is sustainable. What you're doing becomes increasingly automatic and natural and unthinking, so that this is the way you approach any goal. That's where working out loud can have even more benefit. It becomes your way of doing things.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, it can start with 90 minutes a week, and you should find 90 minutes.
And it's not 90
goal,
minutes for something new and extra. It's 90 minutes for the thing you said was the most important.
Yeah.
So back to this phrase we use in week three of pay yourself first. Before you book meetings or podcasts with me, you should have said, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to pay Michael first, and I'm going to work on the thing I said was the most important. And then you could spend the rest of your time. But don't do it the other way around.
Yeah, cool. Week nine.
So now we get to working out loud, you know, to making your work visible, which, again, for listeners to your podcasts or people who work on social networks inside their company or outside, they're like, oh, this isn't new. Like, it's been around for a while. We get it. Most people do not get it. So if you want to make a change in your company or in your culture, you need to reach people for whom this is foreign. If it wasn't foreign, if everyone was doing it, then we wouldn't complain about silos. and we wouldn't complain about not having a learning organization, or we wouldn't need fuck-up nights to tell people it's okay to run an experiment, right? So if everyone did it, we'd be okay. So what this does is says, how could I get people to explore original contributions, actually share something of their work in a way that, that didn't provoke resistance? And with the two techniques we use are one is a top 10 list, and one is a specific piece of learning based on a story in that week. But as an example, so you're new, right? You're new to the world of new work, and you're in week 9. You're like, well, I'd like to explore this topic, and I think I have something to say. So what you did is you said, here are 10 people that are doing brilliant things related to new work. It's not about me. I'm not trying to show how I'm awesome or I'm trying to get a bunch of likes. I am giving credit to 10 people, and it's about them. And here's a resource I think might be helpful to others. And then that resource that you contribute could be a LinkedIn post, could be something else. In your case, it's podcasts. It's like a pebble in a pond. It ripples out, and it starts to bring you into contact with other people, knowledge, ideas. I'm sure after 170 podcasts, 170 pebbles, how many people are like, who's this guy? You should talk to so-and-so, right? Mm. You should.
Yeah, that's what happens.
Now, your partner is now a movie director, right? Like, things emerged that you never would have planned because you made these contributions. That's what the next week's about.
That's cool. But then you see and is coming of the circle. So I like the phrase become more systematic. So how to integrate this in your
daily life. That's right. And how to, for me, like now I'm building a business, right? You've got your own goal in mind that you said you're is a little time starved. And so what week 10 is about is saying, whatever that goal is in this direction that you're now heading in, you're going to introduce some systems or processes that work for you so you stay on track. So you've done some habit things in week 8, perfect example. When I was writing the book, I liked the idea of writing a book, but I didn't necessarily like writing the book. And so when my wife would ask me how it's going, I'd be like, I don't have enough time. She's like, well, how much time have you spent on it so far? I don't know. Well, how much time do you need? I don't know. How much time did you spend last week? I don't know. And now it's uncomfortable, right? If you're married, you know what this is like. So, Michael, how's it going? Yes. So what I did, what every school kid does. You have a little progress chart, and I would say, how much time am I really spending? Just like you described with your time. 0, 0, 1, 0. And you're like, well, okay, no kidding. At this rate, so I did a little gut check. Am I serious about it? I used those habit checklists, structured my calendar, my environment, and then I did it. I had an intention and I acted on it and I felt better. That's what week 10 is about, is saying, here are some techniques for making it more systematic, for helping you to fulfill your intentions.
Yeah. There will be some of our listeners who really start to cry out loud about this story because they follow my book since 2.5 years.
Oh.
And they
where can I buy it?
Gave up that it will be ready. Yeah, the problem is it was ready, and then I realized it's total crap. Because it was my own poor story about finding out what it was shit. It was not about my guests. So
right. You were the guests. Hero instead
now,
of them being
Chris,
the hero.
Christoph and I, so two heroes.
Oh. So it's his fault.
And no, it's bullshit. It's bullshit. No one would read this. Even our kids
would
say, it's about our guests, and so we have to start and to rewrite it.
Right. But that's a good mistake. Yeah. If you produce a bunch of work that leads you to some other realization, other product, okay.
Yeah, imagine the possibilities. Week 11.
Yeah. Week 11, which I've been told by a few people is too American. But that's okay. This is version 5 of the Circle Guys, and this version 6 coming out in a few months. What week 11 is really about is you spend 10 weeks thinking about yourself and your relationships and your contributions, etc. Week 11 is to have you think about it at a higher level. What could my network and I accomplish together? And that's leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Leadership is a definition by Kevin Cruz. Leadership is a process of social influence that maximizes the efforts of others towards a common goal. So I like that definition because it's a process. It's something that happens over time, and it's influence. It's this exchange of signals. It's not just telling people what to do anymore. So week 11, Charles say, like, what if? Imagine the possibilities. What if that little goal you picked in week one? That's great. It's great. You've been doing things towards it. Super. But like, what could you do? And that in week 11, maybe people start to think bigger. Bigger than week 7, even in that letter. And like, well, gee, I really care about one woman yesterday. I really care about climate change and poverty, and I'm on the sidelines. Like, I should be doing something about that. Well, what would that be like? A woman in the audience today has built a network of engineers that visit elementary schools so that they could expose young women and boys to engineers.
And this was a result out of her circle.
Out of her circle. Yeah. And now, so she went from, oh, I'm an electrical engineer and I have a job and this is what I do, to now it's like, oh, yeah, I've started a movement that's spreading across schools in Germany. And this is Daniela. And you're like, what? And that's just the next step. Who knows where she's going to go, right? Her next circle.
Amazing.
So this is to get you to think a little bigger, a little bit more aspirationally now that you're in week 11.
And then it's time to reflect and celebrate.
And cry a little bit. Yeah. Well, if it's worked, then you feel something with these other people. And it's bittersweet. So it's like, so we call it reflect and celebrate, and maybe I'll have a glass of wine. I mean, people will even drink it over Skype, which is a little odd. And so you look back, right? Like, what's the biggest thing that changed? What might I do next? Maybe it's another circle. Maybe it's you take a break. Maybe you try to spread it inside your company. Maybe you keep your progress chart, or there's some other habits that you really stick with. What I think you have at the end, so you've got a bigger network, right? At the surface, that's what this is about. But you've developed a set of skills that say, hey, no matter what I do, I could find people related to that who can help me in some way, and I can engage them so that we develop this trust and relatedness with some of them. And then everybody wins. And you can carry those skills and mindset and apply it to any goal. That's what happens in week 12. I think for some people, they bring it inside their companies, which is really where I struggled and many people struggle with realizing all that they have to offer inside the workplace, because there's just a little box on the org chart that they're supposed to be fitting into. And this gives them a way to step out of that box and be themselves, and they want to spread it. So when they're done, they may feel empowered, but in the most beautiful sense of that word, empowered to be themselves, to be and do more, and then they'll spread it to other people. And that's why we're here in Berlin. That's why it's in 60 countries. It's not because I wrote some magic beans inside some guides. It's because we somehow elicited this feeling, help people experience it, very, very human feeling that now is spreading out.
Amazing. Before we open this for some questions to our listeners here, I would love to thank you.
Oh, thank you. That's nice. Thank me for what?
It's the best hour of the week. It's a short week up to now, but it's the best hour of the week for me.
That's right, the best hour of the week so far.
No.
I guess. That's a growth mindset right there. Like, hey, it could get better, yes.
And I now understand even better why this method is so successful. It's not just the tools, the process, and the thinking behind. And that's what I could feel here, with what the people in our podcast could not see, not feel, but that's why I have to tell it. The relationship you have here in this room, I mean, you do this in hundreds of places in the world, but you know names, you know stories, you're so connected.
That's the best part of the job.
You're such a nice human being, and I'm so proud that we meet, that we met, and I have to hug you.
Oh, that's
the first time. The first time I hug someone in my podcast. Typically, I do it after it, but it really touched me. Thank you so much.
This is one of those rare times I'm speechless. That's really nice. Yeah, thank you.
So we have a nice microphone here. We don't need it in this room, but we need it to get your questions on our tape. Oh, We heard that.
And I will remind all of these Working Out Loud practitioners in the room that your question is a contribution.
Yes. Who wants to start? Yeah? Alexander? Cool.
John, we just had a discussion on stage with Judith Muster. I don't know if you could follow the discussion because it was in German.
When other people laughed, I laughed, and when other people clapped, I clapped.
Okay, so
Judith is great, super smart.
Thank you, John. Oh.
This and you may too. Be the
best.
Sorry, yes.
This is the best hour this week.
Yeah, yes, so. Exactly. So far. Right.
Okay, so but for many people that are here at this conference, they ask themselves, how can they be more effective implementing Working Out Loud in organizations? So we all learned it's very good for yourself. Yeah? This is a very good tool for yourself to be self-empowered. And people are mostly happy if they leave when they leave the Working Out Loud circle. But how can we help organizations implement that stuff? So, what's your view on this?
Well, we've established individuals have established grassroots movements in hundreds of companies.
Great.
What tends to happen is that this kind of thing—a personal development method, peer support, etc. is attractive to, you know, 1% of the people that are like us. They're not normal, like two standard deviations away from normal. So, well, how do you reach the other 99% at your company? And the way we do that, we've learned to do that over the past few years, are there a bunch of techniques for normalizing it. So I'm here in Berlin with Deutsche Bahn as an example. So they would, every week, they'd provide examples from inside Deutsche Bahn. So here are our tools, here are our people, here's what they say, here's showing of appreciation, here's a leader doing something, sharing a resource, and so on. That makes it safer to practice. It makes it easier to practice at work. And then, in particular, one of the most powerful things is they'll plug circles into existing programs. And so now, instead of preaching Working Out Loud, right, the gospel of this new method, nobody cares. Right. They care about work and the challenges that they're facing. So instead, Working Out Loud is in service of something else. It's not the goal. It's the means to a goal. So they'll put it in their onboarding program so new employees can learn how to navigate the company more quickly and build a network. They'll put it into their leadership development program. So it's not just about the in-person workshop that they have, but they establish connectivity between managers globally and so on. And now it's in their calendars. It's normal. You don't have to convince anybody. It's still optional, still a safe, confidential space, which is rare at work. But it's integrated into the everyday fabric of work, and that's how we scale from a few hundred to thousands.
Cool.
I love that you're asking a question right now.
Yeah, I have a question that goes a long time in my head already.
Uh-oh.
So thank you for this opportunity. I would like to know how to relate to people that you experience that are not that open, according to Wolf. Because in my own experience, I experience a lot of pain when I relate to people very often and very trustful, but don't get this as a resonance back.
Mm. Energy vampires.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it hurts a lot.
Yeah.
But on the other side, I also want to behave in according to the Wolf principles. Mm-hmm. So this is a kind of conflict for myself. And do you have a tip how to deal with
sure.
that?
Sure. Thank you for that. Lovely to ask a question. So there's a great study and a lot of simulations about this kind of thing, this giving and receiving. So it turns out, in simulations and in real practice, if I cannot choose my network, then the people who take advantage of you, you will detach. You're like, well, if they're doing this to me, I can't choose who I relate to, so I'm going to do it to them, and the whole system just collapses, right? Which is kind of like a lot of workplaces. Like, oh, I have to deal with these people, and so on. So it brings out the worst in us. same simulation when they did it and you could control, then it's like the prisoner's dilemma simulations, which says, oh, you know, tit for tat, you burned me once, you burned me twice. I'm going to spend my attention with the other people. And then cooperation rules. So the workplace is kind of in the middle. In your case, I guess I'm saying, don't be a sucker. You don't have to be an angel. You don't have to be, you know, the Mother Teresa of working out loud and give. That is not sustainable. But we assume the best of people at first. We're open, we're generous. But then after a while, if it's not working with that particular person, that's okay. For whatever reason, they're not at that point in their life. No judgment, no shame. But I'm going to use my energy with other people. And that makes you happier. That makes it more likely that you could persist. And that has you access people and opportunities that lead to joy and possibility, not the opposite. So you're allowed to do that. I give you permission. You're welcome.
More question?
John, I have a question regarding organizations that work at a very high pace. So I've myself been working in a management consultancy for some years before I decided that the allocation of time was not appropriate. And from that perspective, what I heard a lot in these kind of environments is that people say, our leaders at first gave us the room, but then this great pitch came up, and then this came up, and they cannibalize these kinds of movements like Vol, because in the end, they don't even allow you to focus half an hour on this. Yeah. So what would you answer to a leader who would do that with a team?
You know, it's we should accept the possibility that you're in the wrong place, right? Like, that is possible. And number one. Number two, almost any job you can craft or adjust in certain ways that will spark those intrinsic motivators of control, competence, and connection. But your company, particularly the one you described, look, you've got customer relationships that you need to build. You've got learning about what other clients are doing and how they've solved their other client challenges. That's fundamental to that particular business you showed. And if all you could do, no one lets you do it. If all you could do is spend an hour every 2 weeks, 1% of your time, you could probably find that. And I would do that just to preserve my sense of autonomy. Thank you.
So we have time for one more question, and then I would love
John,
you all for one selfie.
I would like to have your opinion on my opinion. Mm. As a facilitator in few companies facilitating WOL circles, a few of them, my experience is that especially in the first meeting, a lot of participants come in with the expectation to change their corporate culture, which is mostly defined by silo thinking and borders and limits in collaboration and communication. And my opinion to that is that the main intention of WOL is not to change corporate culture, but to follow your own, first to find out your own goal and then to follow it. And it could be a very appreciated side effect that if a small spark starts to... become a big fire, then it becomes a corporate movement. But the first intention, I far understand from you, was individual goal. Am I right with that?
Right. So this isn't about judgment or competition, but that is the best answer I've heard. Yes. Yes. You get an A. Exactly right. So two quick things. First is, and I've heard it today, people are come into this with an expectation. They need to change. The Vorstand needs to join a circle. They should support it. Look, if you're hinging your happiness on what somebody else does, like, that's not a good strategy. Back to culture change, though. It is relevant, And I like the way you said it. It's almost a byproduct. So you, Stefan, change the way you relate to yourself, like what you have to offer, what steps you're willing to take, etc. How you relate to these four other people in your circle, and then more broadly, colleagues, other people. So you've changed a bit, right? Is that going to change the culture? No. Maybe you have 50 circles at your company. Is that going to change the culture? No. But what happens over time, and there's some nice studies that say, well, what's the tipping point? Like, what percentage would we need? And it's between 15 and 25%. So that's going to take a while, which is why culture change programs don't work, because the posters don't do it, and people are messy. But what you're doing is you're providing visible change, and that's how behaviors and ideas spread, is through social networks. You are growing that over time, and what we'd love to test with Judith Muster is what's that number? What's that range where we could say, hey, we've got this many people at our company that have worked in this new way, and it feels different. And I think that's going to be between 15 and 25%. Thank you.
Thank you so much.